Chimirandhasya Kilanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manojastam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakata Mahyam Bhati Shakadam Bhante Ham Shri Guru Shri Dutta Padakamadam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Shabrajatam Shabanam Raghunatam Itam Sakhinam Shatretam Shabhutam Vrijana Siddhitam Krishna Chaitam Radevam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Shahagana Rosita Sri Vishakam Dutam E Krishna Purana Sambhav Dina Bandhav Kripatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamshana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prashabhalo Sute Devi Karmami Hori Priye Vamsha Kopitaru Kyascha Prabhasin Dhoga Evacha Patitanam Bhavane Gyo Vaishnave Gyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Vasudev Prabhu has picked out one verse quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Pull up a chair. Pull up a chair. Please. Seems too big.
I don't use these anymore. Ever again.
Get a small one.
No, seriously.
Okay, passed it. Well, this is Chaitanya Charitamrita, quoting the Brahma Samhita.
Ananda Chinmaya Sarapati Padita, peace. Tabhirya eva nitrupataya kala bhi Go loka eva niva satya kilatma bhuta Govinda mari purusha Tamaham bhutam
I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who resides in his own realm, Goloka. Vrijapa, who resembles his own spiritual figure, and who embodies the ecstatic potency, Nandini. Her companions are her confidants, who embody extensions of her bodily form, and who are imbued and permeated with ever-blissful spiritual rasa. This is the position of Shrimati Radharani. Actually, Kaviraj Goswami will explain this. Krishnare karai yoiche rasa ashvatam kridar sahai yoiche shuna vibharam. Now please listen to how Lord Krishna's consorts help him taste rasa and how they help in his pastimes. Krishna kanta gan deki tribhita prakar eka lakshmi gan Ude Mahishi Kanamar. The beloved consorts of Lord Krishna are three kinds.
Vajanam Gana Rupa Ara Kanta Ganasar Sri Radhika Vete Kanta Ganayavistar.
The beloved consorts of Lord Krishna are of three kinds: the goddesses of fortune, the queens, and the milkmaids of Raja, who are the foremost of all. These consorts all proceed from Vatika.
Avatari Krishna Yajekari Avatar.
Amshini Vata Viste Tim Ganer Vistar. Just as the fountainhead, Lord Krishna, is the cause of all incarnations, so Sri Radha is the cause of all these consorts. So, Radha Krishna Dharanaya Vikriti Latini Shakti Rasma. Srimati Radharani is the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. We hear that Krishna has a knowledge potency, an existence potency, and a pleasure potency. So the pleasure potency is Srimati Radharani, by which Krishna enjoys pleasure and gives pleasure to his devotees. And here it's indicated that Srimati Radharani expands himself to give pleasure to Krishna. Krishna has that capability. He can expand in multiple forms, and his pleasure potency also has that capability to expand yourself in multiple forms. As the Vraja Gopis, as the queens in Dwarka, and as the Lakshmis in the Vaikuntha planets also. Where Krishna appears, his pleasure energy also appears. So Krishna appears by expanding himself, and his pleasure energy expands herself also to give pleasure to Krishna. Krishna appears as Lord Ramchandra, so then Radharani expands his Sita Deva in this way. Krishna expands as Narayan, then Srimati Radharani is expanding as Lakshmi. Lakshmi Gan. Vaibhava Gan Yenatar Anga Vibhuti Bimba Prati Bimba Rupa Mahishir Dati. The goddesses of fortune are partial manifestations of Srimati Radhika, and the queens are reflections of her image. It's bimba prati bimba, reflections of reflections of reflections. So we get the idea that the language is a little complicated, but Sri Prabhupada has explained that Radharani expands, that her expansions expand, her mind expand. Lakshmi Gantar by Bhav Vilansha Vilanshamsharu Mahishi Gan by Bhav Prakash Sharu. The goddesses of fortune are plenary portions, and they display the forms of Vaibhav Vilas. The queens are of the nature of the Vaibhav Prakash. These are technical subject matters dealt with by Srila Rupa Goswami in Lagu Pangalatamita. The whole business of how Krishna expands. And you can really get lost in this. It's explained in Sirtan of Charitamrita by Bhav Prakash and by Bhav Vilas, and it goes on and on. It has to do with Krishna sometimes appearing in his full manifestation, sometimes appearing in forms that are practically identical, just as when he expands in the Rasa dance, they're all identical Krishnas, or when he expands to marry 16,000 queens, they're all identical Krishnas. And then sometimes he appears differently when he expands as Balaram. The feature changes when he expands as Narayan. It's the same Krishna, but now he has four arms and a different appearance. So these are different features of the Lord, by Bhav Vilas, by Bhav Prakash. And similarly, Radharani keeps pace with Krishna. She also expands in a similar fashion.
Makar Svabhav Bhede Raja Devi Gam Gai Vyuha Rupa
Nectar, Rasir, Karan. The Vrajadevis have diverse bodily features. They are expansions and are the instruments for expanding Rasa. It's not, so here are the particular manifestations. The Vrajadevis means the gopis in Vrindavan. They're expansions of Srimati Radharani. They're not ordinary living entities. No, that's the first thing. That where jivas, Krishna has a potency called Jiva Shakti, which is his marginal potency. It's somewhere between, it's called Tatastha Shakti, it's between material energy and the full-fledged spiritual energy. It's like the sand on the shore. Sometimes it's underwater, sometimes it's on land. So we're marginal, very tiny marginal potencies. We can be, if we're not careful, overwhelmed by Maya. Or if we look the other way toward Krishna, then we're okay. But Srimati Radharani has nothing to do with marginal energy. Not nothing to do with. She doesn't belong to the marginal energy. She's not a jiva soul. She's not a liberated living entity. Anything like that. She's the eternal transcendental energy of Krishna. And when we come to these Rajadevis and the Lakshmis and so on, they're also expansions of Srimati Radharani. They're expansions of Srimati Radharani. Now, there are other living entities who get to take part in Krishna's pastimes in the form of gopis, but they're not in this same category. So Radharani expands herself in these different forms to give pleasure to Krishna. Just that, as you know, we'll give pleasure to Krishna by, say, we'll play kartals and chant. And then someone else will come say, why don't you play mridanga? So now we have kartals and chanting and mridanga. Someone else comes and says, could you play harmonium? The person comes, and now we have a nice group of harmonium and kartals and mridanga, and someone's chanting. But Srimati Radharani, she just expands herself to do the whole thing. To give pleasure to Krishna in different ways, she can expand herself as the mridanga player, as the kartal player, as the harmonium player, or in any capacity. This gopi, that gopi, because they'll all give different, give pleasure in different ways. They all have different moods, they all have different character, they all have different, qualities. And Krishna will enjoy how nice this gopi is, how nice this gopi is, how nice this gopi is, how nicely this one is serving, how nicely that one is serving. So rather than just stay as one form, Srimati Radharani expands herself in these multiple forms to give pleasure to Krishna. Instruments for expanding rasa. Rasa means taste. You get taste when there's variety. The Maya bodies want to make everything one. They're total, they're called kevaladvaitins. Absolute oneness, that's their goal. Everything should be absolutely one. And on the Vaishnava side, we're completely in favor of variety. The more, the better. And not only should there be one gopi to be with Krishna, but there should be many gopis to be with Krishna. Because then there's more taste. Just like when you have prasad. Okay, it can be khichdi, and that's transcendental because it's offered to Krishna. But it's nice when there's a feast, and it's not just khichdi, but there's, even if there's khichdi, you say, you know, could there be a papadam or something, or a little yogurt, or whatever, because we like variety. Or even the khichdi, you know, you put two or three vegetables, then it becomes more appreciated. Or if there's a big feast with so many preparations, then the enjoyment increases. And you're not going to eat any more, necessarily. It's the same, you know, you're not going to eat 10 kilos instead of 3 kilos. But because there's different tastes, is it more appreciated? Like this garland. It could be all white flowers, but because there's white flowers and purple flowers, it's more appreciated. The variety adds to the nice character of the garland. So when there are many different bhogis, each with their own character, each with their own mood, each with their own way of serving Krishna, then Krishna enjoys more. So Srimati Radharani expands herself in these different gopis who are described as instruments for expanding rasa. Variegated tastes.
Babu kanta vina nahi raser ulas lilar sahai lagi bahuta prakash.
Without many consorts, there's not such exaltation in rasa. It's not as much fun. Not as enjoyable. Therefore, there are many manifestations of Srimati Radharani to assist in the Lord's pastimes.
Tar madhye vaje nana bhava rasa bhede Krishna ke kurai vasarika vilasvani.
Among them are various groups of consorts in Vajra. There are varieties of sentiments and mellows. They help Lord Krishna taste all the sweetness of the rasa dance and other pastimes. So they're in groups, they're different groups of gopis, and they have different moods. Later in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami will say there's right wing gopis and left wing gopis. For those who are still stuck in politics of right wing and left wing and what these old crusty senators and politicians are doing. That's just a thin reflection of spirit. We have politics in the spiritual world. There's right wing and left wing. There are different moods, especially the left wing, which gets very political. They're political activists. The right wing gopis are the gopis who are very submissive. They're very submissive. Not among the gopis, but among the queens. Rukmini Devi is in that mood. Very submissive. You know, Krishna is teasing her, saying, you know, you're such a beautiful queen and you're so qualified that all the best princes in the world were just dying to have you as their husband, as their wife. And somehow or other, you chose me. A person who's not really very qualified at all. I'm just a coward. I ran away from the enemies and made my kingdom in the middle of the ocean. And I have no qualities, and nobody knows whether I'm a Kshatriya or a Vaishya. I'm a real loser here. So you made the wrong choice. But better late than never. You could just leave me aside and then choose someone else. Those other kings would still be thrilled to have you. So you could just forget about me and accept one of them. And so Krishna is practically proposing divorce. You know, now they have sons and Krishna's proposing, you know, we can just forget about the whole thing and scratch it off and find someone else. And Rukmini doesn't fight back. She doesn't say expletive, 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 expletive. She just says, doesn't say anything. She just finally just faints. She just finally faints. Whereas Satyatthama, on the other hand, is completely left-wing. She's just quarrelsome. Who do you think you are? Proud and demanding. You know, you gave Rukmini a Parijata tree. You gave a Parijata flower to Rukmini. What about me? you know, don't you love me? What's going on here? How come she got one and I didn't get one? You know, so that's Satyabhama. So Krishna says, all right, come on, we'll go get a whole tree. So there's different moods. And Krishna's enjoying both moods. He's enjoying both moods. When his wives are very submissive, that's nice. And when they're a little feisty, that's another taste. Just like chili. You know, it's hot, but it's enjoyable taste. So Sri Radharani is expanding herself in these different forms to give pleasure to Krishna. So that Krishna will enjoy these different tastes. So among the queens, among the gopis also, there are different groups, and they have different attitudes, different sentiments. And by these different attitudes and sentiments, they're increasing Krishna's enjoyment. From another point of view, they're all expansions of Radharani. Radharani is also the expansion of Krishna. So, actually, there's absolute oneness as the Maya body is one, Kevaladvaita. But that oneness comprehends unlimited variety. In the Upanishads, Prashya Shakti Vidhana Shrita, the absolute truth has varieties of energies. Prabhupada said, when you strip off energies, there's no meaning to absolute truth. Just like if you take the sun and strip off the sunlight. Like, what are you talking about? You know, what is that sun minus sunlight? You know, you have to have both the sunlight and the sun. Or the sun and the sunlight. And they're one. You can't separate sunlight and sun. But they're different also. If the sun were in your room, you'd be dead. But you enjoy the sunshine. So oneness and difference, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's philosophy. Simply oneness is no good. And simply difference is also not accepted. So Radha and Krishna are one, but they're eternally manifest as two for enjoyment. Raso Vaisa, Krishna, the absolute truth, is described as the reservoir of all enjoyment. So how will you enjoy it? By variety. You know, Prabhupada gave the example, if I'm sitting here talking and there's no one else here, it's not as enjoyable. But because there are many people, so then there's some taste, some enjoyment. So Krishna alone, that's not enjoyable. But Krishna expanding his pleasure energy, then the enjoyment is manifest. Maybe we'll take some comments and questions and so forth.
There's a nice story which
we have another, don't we? Our microphone. Is this a double microphone institution? It's not up here anyway. Okay, we're a speak loud institution, right?
Yeah. There's a nice story which kind of underscores the
point. Oh, if we turn off the fans, then? Yeah, then we all get miserable. Better just talk about it.
As long as you can hear. There's a nice story which underscores the two of the points that you made. One is the different moods of the different camps, how one camp is kind of belligerent and the other camp is kind of mellow and submissive. It's when Krishna was with Radha, and then Radha fell asleep. So Krishna quietly got up and left Radharani, and he was thinking of Iraja, another gopi. So while Radha took rest, he snuck off to Iraja, because she had a particular mood that Krishna enjoyed very much. So when Radha woke up, she said, you know, where's Krishna? Of course, the separation anxiety was immediately there. So they said, Krishna has gone. He's gone elsewhere. So where is he gone? He's gone to see Viraja. So Radharani said, immediately, get into my chariot. So she gets into her chariot, which is described as being 100 yojanas long. And she takes her personal servants with her, which totals 630 million. And they all get onto her chariot to go find Krishna, who is now consorting with Viraja. So when they get there, Sridham is blocking the way. So Sridham's standing there with a stick, and he's very strong, and he's blocking the way. And Radharani gets up, and she is angry. She says, get out of my way. And Sridham's standing there with a stick. So Sridham would move, of course, because he's a servant of Krishna. So Radharani said, get him out of my way. So Radharani's, all of her servants, they come and they pick up Sridham and they move him out of the way. So then Radharani runs in to the bower where Viraja and Krishna are. But Krishna immediately knows, uh-oh, Radha's here. He disappears. So upon his disappearance, two things happen. First, Viraja is in so much separation that her form becomes a river, Viraja, and surrounds Goloka. And the second thing that happens is Radharani comes in and she doesn't see Krishna. So she's also in separation. So we can see from, there's more to the story, but I won't go on. But we can see from that the unlimited servants that Srimati Radharani has, just in that little leela, that little pastime, she takes 630 million of her servants with her. And then the feistiness, the anger that was there, where is Sridhar, you're blocking the movement, you take them up and move them. So.
Yes.
I was thinking of two things. The first is how Srila Prabhupada has taught us the identity of God. And when I think of all the other philosophies and religions of the world, who they think God is, and they just imagine someone old, white hair. This is so extraordinary. And the other thing I think of is that Srimati Radharani's love is beyond, obviously, our ability to measure, but when Krishna appears as Lord Chaitanya and embodies that love, one of the manifestations of that love is this desire to bring every single soul in the entire universe back to Krishna, to become part of Krishna's enjoyment. So, 630 million, but when Lord Chaitanya appears to liberate every soul and every species on every planet of this universe as a reflection of Radharani's love, that to me is a glimpse of how inconceivable this love is.
Krishna and Radharani's mood is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wants to bring everyone to be engaged in Krishna's service. That story is famous, that you were promoting Sankirtan at one point by comparing the book distributors to, by saying that they were in the mood of the gopis, because the mood of the gopis is to bring, the mood of Radharani is to bring the others to be engaged in the service of Krishna. And so then the other devotees got wait a second, you know, Ramachandra is like, we believe in Sankirtan, we're behind Sankirtan, but you know, let's not go too far and like start making up all this stuff just to, you know, messing with the philosophy just to push book distribution. I mean, that is getting a little over the top. So they went to Prabhupada and said, you know, that Ramachandra is saying this. And Prabhupada said, yes, this is right. That this is actually correct. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood, or this is the mood of Srimati Radharani to bring everyone to be engaged.
Those troublemakers were flexibly in Gopi books as
Yes.
I have a question. How can we be attracted to pastimes that are so far beyond our understanding?
How can we be attracted to pastimes that are so far beyond our understanding? You could put it the other way and say, how can you not be attracted to pastimes that are so far beyond our understanding? Of course, there are pastimes that are so far beyond our understanding that we're advised to leave them alone. Because they're far from our understanding, but they're not very far from our misunderstanding. We'll mistake them for being something like the activities of the material world, and that will not be healthy. So there's some pastimes that we're advised to leave alone. Srila B.R. Sridhar Maharaj said that there were that their Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura, prohibited his disciples from discussing certain topics. That there were certain sections of Chaitanya Charitamrita they could read in course of reading the books, but not discuss. A higher section of Ramananda Sambhava, discussion between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, and certain other sections. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, yes, you can read them, not that we cut them out of the book, but you can't sit and discuss these things. They're over your head.
Wasn't there one book that Srila Bhakti Mukhtar wanted to translate? And he wanted to... But Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to translate, and he went to Bhakti Vinod Thakur. I don't know if it was Govinda Leelamrita or something like that. It was one of the esoteric poems of Chandida.
Poems of Chandidas and the Dhyana.
Yeah, so he went to Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He said, I'd like to translate, publish these. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur said, yes, you do it and make two copies. One for me and one for you.
Prabhupada's approach to these subject matters, that it's not that just by devouring as much esoteric or high-level Krishna katha as possible, one suddenly realizes the meaning of it, but rather by executing the orders of the spiritual master and by chanting Hare Krishna. So that Prabhupada's said that in maturity, in mature time, these things will automatically be understood. He gave the example of a child. If you try to explain to a child what sex is, they won't get it. There's just no, you try to explain this way, that way, they're not going to understand. When they'll grow up, they'll understand. You would have to explain it. So in maturity, these things will automatically become manifest. In the neophyte stage, if we try to understand the intimate pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, we'll misunderstand because we don't have the maturity of realization. We're still not free from the effects of the material energy. But in mature stage, by chanting Hare Krishna, everything will come. Everything will come by chanting Hare Krishna.
I think what you said is true, that the combination of pure chanting and being completely absorbed in our service purifies our senses and our mind and our intelligence. I think without that, you have to both.
Yeah. Chanting, Seva Mukhi Jivanos, Fire Neighbors Pratyana. By service, Krishna manifests himself. And that's the only way we realize anything, is that Krishna reveals it, he discloses it. Otherwise, Yoga Maya Samadhi, it's hidden. The biggest scholars, you know, we know scholarly friends who, they know so much more about Gaudiya Vaishnavism than we do. They know so much, they've read so much more of the literature in the original language than we have. But they can't understand it. They can't say, all right, I'm going to give up intoxication, gambling, eating, and illicit sex, and devote myself to the service. They can't say that. They haven't reached that point. Even though they're exceedingly qualified as scholars.
Would it be accurate to say that their understanding is the historic Vaishnavism, not the ahistoric?
Their understanding is the historic, not the ahistoric? I'm not quite sure what you mean.
Well, this Vaishnavism, as it's evolved over time, historically, there's been this philosophical school that developed in that philosophical school, and these differences of details in the philosophy. This king invaded in this town.
Yeah, well, they know. I mean, we're interested in that, too. We're interested in our history, and they know more about it than we do.
They haven't accepted a pure devotee as their guru.
That's the thing. That their prophet said, licking the bottle. They're exceptional. Some of these scholars, and some of them very nice, very, very appreciative also. Very nice people, and some of them have also helped our movement, so that's appreciated. But, you know, when push comes to shove, they're scholars of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. They're not Gaudiya Vaishnavists. They don't even claim to be Gaudiya Vaishnavists, with some exceptions. So they're scholars. And Krishna never says, you just become a scholar and understand academically what the truth about me is. And then, you know, Vamiti, sorry, you'll come to me. You get tenure, you get published, you get, you know, all sorts of other things.
That's great.
But, you know,
very much.
Back to
Krishna said, he says to give it up.
There's some. I think there's one scholar. She actually became a Vaishnava. She took initiation on some. It's sort of like future hope. You could see that they're attracted to Krishna or attracted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's kind of like future hope. And even then, sometimes they have rendered service, or they come into the association of the pure devotee. So
there was
not ordinary people in one sense.
There was a big scholar in Geneva who came to see Srila Prabhupada, Jean Herbert.
John Herbert.
He had written a book called Krishna, the Divine Lover, or something like that. And everything was metaphorical. You know, the gopis meant this, the dust raised by the hoofs of the calves meant that. Prabhupada had a very heated debate with him. And that, after he left, we were sitting around waiting for the post-mortem, you know, waiting for Prabhupada to really launch into him. Prabhupada didn't say a thing. So I think it was Hansa Duda said, he was a big demon, wasn't he, Prabhupada? And I said, no, he's been contaminated by associating with Mayavadis. But in his book, he has mentioned the name Krishna many times, and that will benefit him greatly.
Nice. This is just, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement has affected all sorts of people in all sorts of ways. In this whole Indian Indology net, like up till you know, the early 1970s, Indology net, Advaita Vedanta. It meant Mayavada philosophy, and that was it. That was Hinduism, that was Indian philosophy, Buddhism and Mayavada. And since Prabhupada, the whole field has changed. You can't write about Hinduism and not talk about bhakti. You just can't. It's not no longer possible. And there are whole, you know, batches of scholars who are just interested in bhakti, interested in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, interested in Krishna. Whole resurgence of, or whole emergence really of scholarly interest. And at the root of it all is Prabhupada and his writings and his consciousness. Even if they become interested in Ramanuja and they become interested in all of it, usually the starting point is Prabhupada anyway. This whole field has grown, even in the scholarly world, from Prabhupada's influence.
Single-handedly reversed 1,300 years of misunderstanding.
Yeah, I mean, it's really remarkable. I don't know to what extent scholars would acknowledge that they've been that Prabhupada had influenced them so much. But even, you know, when Bhagavad Gita first came out, Bhagavad Gita as it is, scholars were complaining, you know, that Prabhupada is interpreting the whole thing to get bhakti out of it, and he interprets the fourth chapter by referring to the 12th chapter, and, you know, I don't know what's wrong with that, but that was somehow, you know, something you could criticize. And, you know, they were trying to make it a bhakti text, when really it's about so many other things. And then, and then after a while, scholars themselves, Barbara Stolder-Miller came out and heard Bhagavad Gita. She's totally a non-devotee. But basically came out and said, yeah, it's a bhakti text. And now they've kind of all backtracked. And everybody says, yeah, you know, Bhagavad Gita is a bhakti. The Vedas and the Upanishads, that's another thing. But the Gita is a bhakti text. So, again, it's Prabhupada. It's, you know, and so they don't say that anymore. We don't hear, you know, that Swami Bhaktivedanta has tried to interpret the Bhagavad Gita to turn it into a bhakti text. They more or less have to concede, well, the Gita is a bhakti text. We still have the Upanishads to refer to for our Mayavadi bias. But yeah, the Gita is basically a bhakti text, and Krishna bhakti and that. So, Prabhupada's done one of these things. And what to speak of those who, you know, leave scholarship aside, those who have actually taken to Krishna consciousness, actually taken to the process, what then? I'm assuming that when it's... Well, no, I'm not assuming. Tell me what to do. Guru Puja?
Yeah, one more comment.
One more comment than Guru Puja. Okay, good. You always need a voice from a higher region.
That Prabhupada and Yogeshwar was making about the importance of hearing from that distinct feature, because within the Vedic paradigm for learning, there's hearing and reflection and then assimilation and ultimately distribution. So Prabhupada, I've read in many of his purports and everything where he actually follows the Vedic paradigm. But that important component of hearing from the lips of the pure devotee, that is the difference. You can't understand through academic, you can't understand on any other level other than if you have the association of the pure devotee. Then that whole Vedic paradigm where we're hearing and then we're thinking about it, reflecting upon it, meditating upon it. But then the third feature of the learning paradigm is that we actually take it as a realization and assimilate it into our life. And then even beyond that, once we've done that, we're, by the mercy of Guru and Guranga, we're tasting a little bit, but then the extreme desire to give it out also completes that kind of cycle.
Therefore, Prabhupada said, therefore I am stressing, distribute.
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu.